Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No. We're going to teabag fight. Yeah.
You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's The Session. Welcome back to another beer-filled Monday. And I'm excited about today's guest. We have Lead Dog Brewing. Mr. Thomas Wisdom is on the line with us. Thomas, how's it going, man?
Good. How you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I appreciate you you joining us. And you're in Reno Sparks, Nevada.
Correct.
The Reno Sparks area. Cool. I like that area. Reno, Reno is like, I don't know. It feels like it's always, when I think about Reno, it's like always in like 1965. I don't know why. Because I like that part of Reno where it's just like, there's cobblestones on the walls or like not like slate or whatever. It's that very like late 60s design. Those are my favorite casinos to go into. It's just like that's what's always seared into my mind. But Reno is huge now. Like Reno's expanded a lot.
Yeah, it's blown up. I've been looking for a house to buy and it's more expensive than you would think.
Really?
So, yeah. Well, when everybody started working from home at the beginning of COVID, the tech crowd moved up into the Tahoe, and that kind of pushed a lot of the Tahoe locals down into Reno, and so
wow, just displaced everybody. I hate to see it, man. I've read a few articles. I don't think anybody really knows where everybody went. It's almost like a missing tribe, right? Where it's like people left San Francisco Bay Area, but you see some people go like, oh well, we just moved out to the burbs, or they left the state in general. It was a really weird displacement.
Yeah, any outdoor recreation little town out there like Bishop or Mammoth Lakes or Lake Tahoe, Leavenworth up in Washington, I think a lot of those, anybody who like mountain bikes and skis went there. So
I mean, at some point, why not? I don't know.
Yeah.
I would always be too afraid to do that because I'd be afraid of like the locals, finger wagging me or worse.
Oh, yeah.
Because you hear these stories, in, especially like in Portland, where it seems to be like people are really mean about
if you have
people
California
moving to California.
Plates, yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And I was like, I got my car spit on one time driving through Portland. It's like, I'm not even going to live here. I'm literally driving north. Like, I don't know. I don't understand. But I was in a cab several years ago and the cab driver was like, yeah, well, these houses, these ones here were like vandalized a couple of years ago because people from California moved in and they spray painted on their garage door, move back to California. And then they left. And it's a whole like, it's weird, man. So I would be super nervous to go. I don't know. To just go displace myself. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
me.
It's kind of crazy. But you know, when you know people move in, usually the some good restaurants follow, some good coffee shops. The beer scene gets a little better, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what that is like, because you do have understandably more money, I guess, moving mm-hmm. in, you know, yeah. so you can support more businesses and more local businesses like it, I'm sure. But I'm sure the residents hate it because they're like yourself trying to save up, buy a house,
yeah.
do a thing. Yeah. And it just gets harder and harder with seem like every month
mm-hmm.
prices Definitely. Go up and up. Yeah. But anyway, we're not here to talk about real estate, everybody. Actually, this is a real estate podcast now. I'm transitioning the show and mm-hmm. We're just talking about buying the dip. And I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I can put my Venmo out there if anybody needs some bad advice.
Yeah, Cash App me, and I only take Shiba coin in payment. So, that's all I do. Anyway, before we get to the beer, though, I want to thank our sponsor, More Beer. You can go to morebeer.com, and you can find absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home. And when I say beer, of course, it's wine and coffee and kombucha. I don't know why I decide that beer is just the thing, that all-encompassing craft you can do at home that involves more beer. I don't know why, but that's just what it is. You can do all that kind of fun stuff, all the ingredients, all the supplies, all the recipes that you're ever going to need, books, equipment, morebeer.com. Check it out. All right, Thomas, give me a little background on your brewing history. How did you get into craft beer, man?
Well, I got out of the Coast Guard and moved to Fort Collins, Colorado in 2010. And that's where I really got my education in what good beer was. Because before then, I drank a lot of Yingling and IPAs that I judged by IBU content.
Okay. So you were the target demographic for craft beer drinkers back then. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. It's your fault. All right. Got it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Then I moved to Fort Collins and was like, wow, there's other kinds of beers than IPA and Yingling. Holy shit. And then I had some friends that like worked at Odell and like New Belgium, and got to know a lot of the small pubs around town, and started homebrewing and was applying to nursing schools and went to a hospital and freaked out because I didn't want to do that. And right at that time, Colorado State came out with the fermentation science program. So I transferred into that and was in the first round of graduates in 2015. Wow. And then went to 10 Barrel Brewing out of college up in Bend and was a production brewer up there for like 2.5 years.
Yeah. Okay. We were talking about that. That's the evil, the evil part.
I can hear the hisses out there.
Did your craft friends like harass you a little bit about that? Like, bro, what are you doing?
No, they're like, wow, I'm glad you found a job.
All right.
And it was like 6 months after the buyout happened. So I kind of got to see some of the changes. Like a lot of things got fixed. Health insurance got better. Pay got better.
Wow.
They just had, you know, AB has really deep pockets. So they had, you know, a lot of money to do like cool things. So coming from like the employee perspective, that's, I don't have too many bad things to say. If I was like competing with them, like distribution wise, you know, that's a whole other topic.
Sure.
But, from there I went down to Bishop, California with a pub brewer for about a year and a half. And then from there went to 50/50 Brewing up in Truckee where I was the head brewer.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit and I was out looking for a job with like everyone else. And I got a job doing QA at Y East up in Hood River.
Okay.
So I did that for a little while and that was fun. It just kind of was a bad fit for what I really wanted to do. And I kind of got lonely up there, to be honest. Cause I had one really good friend who was a winemaker up there, but she was gone for most of it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of wanted to move back down to the like Reno, Tahoe, east side of the Sierra, and Lead Dog needed a head brewer, so interviewed, got the job, and moved down exactly a year ago.
Oh wow, hey, congrats.
Thanks.
That's a lot of moving around. I don't know if I could do that. That takes I think it takes a certain fortified constitution or whatever, you know what I mean, to not just be like, well, there's no brewer jobs in my area, so I guess I'm gonna work at Starbucks.
I grew up in Ohio and like joined the Coast Guard and moved, had to do 4 moves for the Coast Guard in 4.5 years.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of kept going, and I'm sick of moving right now. I hope I never have to do it again.
Bro, moving sucks, man. Anytime, once you hit 40, always pay for movers.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But I'm sure you're like a experienced advanced age when it comes to moving. Yeah. Moving sucks. Yeah. Nobody wants to do it.
No, it's like the last like 10% of your stuff. It doesn't fit well into anything. So it just goes in a box, and it's just a couple boxes of junk that takes forever to organize. And
it sits around. Did you ever homebrew at all?
Yeah. Yeah. I homebrewed for a couple years, when I was in Colorado, when I was in college.
Okay.
And that was fun. I made some really horrible, horrible beer. And I had one of those Mr. Beer kits.
Yes, dude. Yes. Those are the greatest gateway to home brewing beer is Mr. Beer, because it's terrible objectively. It's just never really good. And then, but if you're hooked on the smells and the process, you get sucked right into your local homebrew shop.
Oh, yeah. And, in Fort Collins, there's an awesome homebrew shop called Hops and Berries. Mm-hmm. The owner was a brewer who his wife moved to town and he couldn't really find a job. But, you know, there was no homebrew shop. So he started a homebrew shop and then ended up building a pub right next to it. Equinox. It's like right downtown. Spent a lot of time in there. And nice. They let me go in and like clean kegs. When I was in the fermentation program, just to get some experience there. And
how nice of them.
yeah. I was so excited. Let me clean kegs and scrub drains. This is awesome.
That is funny how excited we get at just putting our foot in the door of a field that we're interested in. But it's like such hard work cleaning kegs. Like I was doing that for more beer when I first started. It's like the first thing you do is clean kegs.
Mm-hmm.
I was really excited about it, but it sucked ass. It was the worst thing in the world to do. Yeah, it's terrible. You cut 45, 50 homebrew kegs, you know, it's like, I don't want to. But at the time, it's just rose-colored glasses, man.
Yeah, I was just looking for something to put on a resume and get some free beer out of it.
Yeah. Sounds like it worked, man.
Yeah. So far, so good.
So you wound up with Lead Dog and right about a year ago, so that's middle of the pandemic. I say that like there's like an end forthcoming. How was the transitioning to a new place during a pandemic? Was that a little stressful on you?
Yeah. They had a lot of can placement, which was good. You know, 30 barrel brew house, you know, full can line and everything. So we didn't really keg anything until I would say April. You know, we'd pull 4 or 5 kegs off of each 30 barrel batch just to have in our tap rooms, and you know, if the sales guys wanted any, but it was pretty much all cans. So that definitely kept us afloat. Kept us going.
I imagine that wasn't the case pre-pandemic.
I don't think so. Well, the Lead Dog started out about 5 years ago, and it was a like 10 barrel pub system, and then the owner sold that to help pay for the production facility. And the production facility has been operational, I think, about 2.5 years.
Okay.
So most of it was during COVID, was getting started and rolled right into COVID.
That's amazing to me how these business owners can just manage that. I don't know. It just takes a certain kind of person. I don't think I could do that. I don't know what I would. I've never been in that position or had that many lives in my hands as far as employees or how much money to sink in there. But yeah, I think that's pretty cool. And I wonder how, maybe you can help me figure it out a little bit, but is there any talk about, well, look, the pandemic is going to, the impact on the sales is probably going to wane at some point. Is there, you know, how do you shift to that or how do you prepare for that? Is it like, well, now we have, you know, more focus on cans, but eventually it's going to pull back to draft. So we shouldn't push too much in cans, or is there a strategy there? Or is it just ebb and flow?
It's just kind of ebb and flow. You know, we have good sales guys, two good sales guys that, you know, whenever we transfer a beer over, we just shoot them. Like they have an idea of what they want for the breakdown, but we shoot them the yield and they give us like the full breakdown on, you know, what they want packaged. And like when California went back into mask mode, you know, we just kind of planned for that. Like, well, probably won't do as many kegs. So we'll dial those back a little bit and,
A lot of thinking on your feet. I guess I never realized the correlation between what your sales guys are telling you and then what you're packaging. I don't know why. I always figured like you guys would just plan for that. Like, okay, well, you have, five pallets of this, go sell it. And that's, is that normal?
I think so. We're so new still that we don't have historicals to go back and look at, because most of the production was during COVID.
Okay.
So it's kind of a week by week basis. Now that we work with Mammoth a lot, they've been around for like 25 years or something. They have really good historicals that they can kind of base their packaging breakdowns on.
Okay.
We try to be super nimble with it. And
it sounds like it's what you got to do, especially that's how you survive, I guess. I mean, that's how people are. Yeah, we love the people at Mammoth, man. The that Mammoth Beer Fest, the Mammoth Brews and Blues, I think is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Bluesapalooza.
Bluesapalooza, there you go. Yeah. That thing rocks, man. We went up there a few years ago and did a video. That slapped. That was a great, great trip. And actually, that's when we burned our brakes. Our brakes in the RV caught on fire coming down one of the grades because Justin didn't, I guess, plan his route properly. Our brakes literally caught on fire. We were on the side of the road for 2 hours throwing rocks at signs.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it was great. And then we ended up having to stay in the back of there's a mechanic shop, I think right on the main drag, like right down the same street as the brewery, as Mammoth. We just slept there for 2 days when we were doing the thing.
Wow.
Saw bears just in the parking lot. It was rad. I don't know. It's a really fun, frightening experience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I read a couple things. Number one, that the founder, Ryan, I forget his last name, he was 21 when he started this brewery.
Yeah, he got out of college.
I don't believe
was like, I'm going to start a brewery, and started a brewery. Yeah, started a brew pub.
Jeez, man. I don't even know what I was doing at 21. I was definitely still in junior college.
Yeah. I was making not the best life decisions, when I was 21. He left us in over the summer, so Mammoth Brewing bought us. They needed a place to make their beer because, as you saw, they have a pretty small pub system wedged in their restaurant. And initially it was, they approached us about contract brewing. But, after crunching the numbers, it just made more sense for them to buy us out. And I think Ryan was pretty ready at that point. It was a stressful couple of years. They sold out. So that happened mid-April. And we've been cranking out Mammoth beer since. So everything that comes out of a Mammoth can, that's in a can for Mammoth, we brew here in Sparks.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Yeah. What is it about you and like wherever you go, mergers happen?
It just kind of, it just makes sense. I mean, there's no craft cell phones out there. There's no craft cars. I think it's, I'm not the most business savvy person, but it kind of makes sense from a production standpoint and reach a bigger audience, diversify your portfolio, fill in some gaps. Their case, it was cheaper than building a 30 or 50 barrel brew house,
which is sort of amazing to me. The fact that you can just take over, and take over, I don't mean like hostile, but, take over business operations, buy another company, merge another company, however you want to put it. And like, that's just cheaper to absorb than to say, okay, here's a building, let's get tanks, let's do all this stuff. And I'm sure, some of it has to do with the supply chain issues or whatever, but, I don't know. I think that's pretty cool. You guys are keeping in the craft and, it sounds like they could use your production capacity. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you had capacity. That's the other side of it. You had enough room to accommodate their beers and it sounds like it's working out.
Yeah. So far, we do more like hazy milkshake, pastry boys, like the hype styles. And Mammoth does more of like the traditional kind of basic like IPA, pale ale, Kolsch, Pilsner. So they complement each other pretty well.
Yeah. See, here you are. You're still influencing the weird trends that I'm trying to get rid of. And I don't understand it. I'm kidding. Well, normally in the first segment, I do start with a beer. And the only beer that I thought would work in the first segment is the Fest beer. And it's called...
I think it's just called Fest beer.
Called fest beer. Okay. Oh, there's like words. I don't know if it's Latin at the bottom or whatever, but.
Oh, it's German. That's true lager in German.
True lager. See, this is how stupid I am. It's a fest beer. It's a German style beer. Why would it be in Latin? Why would there be Latin writing? Of course, it's going to be German, right? I don't know. Anyway, tell me a little bit about the fest beer, man. It's very, very delicious, and it sounds like it's sort of a step away from what you normally do if you're doing hazies and pastries and stuff like that.
Yeah. So the old owner Ryan had bought a 60 barrel lagering tank from, I think, Bear Republic. Okay. Don't quote me on that. And
it's on record now, dude.
Yeah, it's on the internet. It has to be true.
That's right.
So this is the first beer that we did out of it. And so we're going to do like a whole lager series. And it's the timing worked out to do an Oktoberfest. And we wanted to call it Fest Beer. So that way we could sell it after October.
Makes sense.
And yeah, we were going for a little bit less sweet, a little drier, a little more drinkable. The goal is to, be able to drink it by the liter, right?
Right.
And, the sweeter it is, I think the less refreshing it tends to be.
Agreed.
And we just wanted to have, that bread crust characteristics, but still be pretty light, pretty drinkable, mid 5 ABV. I think it's 5.4, 5.5 or something.
Can says 5.6.
Oh, 5.6.
So you're right there. You're close enough, man.
Close enough for government work.
Homebrewer math, it's fine.
Yeah. So fermented it and then stuck it in a lager tank for a month and a half before we needed to release it. And then every beer in the series, we're going to do 4 or 5 beers a year in the series, and we're going to do 2 to 2.5 months of lager time. Oh, yeah. And not use any biofine. We'll run it through our centrifuge, transferring it in, but other than that, we just want everything to settle like naturally. We can't do decoction mashing in our brew house, unfortunately, but we want to try to make it as traditional as possible.
I mean, you could. It would just take bucket at a time, a camp chef stove. You got it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very complex. Also, you got the yeast, esters with the malt. It's very rich and not just one dimensional. Sometimes these things can be that way with people who don't really either fully understand the style or maybe they don't care or whatever. What kind of yeast are you using on this?
We used Weinstephaner strain from White Labs.
Okay. It's a good strain. It's a perfect strain.
And then the malt bill was a lot of Munich malt, a little Cara Munich, I think a little bit of Pilsner in there.
Okay.
I think a little bit of Munich too, but mostly Munich.
That smells great. Yeah, this is very good. This is easily drink by the liter.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been the staff's go-to for a while.
Are sort of, I'm going to classify these as darker lagers, but maybe bigger lagers is a different different word. Do these go over well in the area?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Doing an Oktoberfest is kind of a good starting point for us because we've never really done lagers before. I think they did an Oktoberfest last year, but it's definitely new for us. And, we do a lot of like the hype style. So dipping our toes into the lager game and it is definitely kind of a challenge. I think more for the sales guys, they have to go out and sling it. the true test will be, we have a Doppelbock coming out in the beginning of December. So that'll be a little better idea of what we can and can't sell. But locally it does pretty good. It was a full 60 barrels and we're about out. So, it took about 2 months. And so,
2 months for almost 60 barrels. I think that's pretty good. I don't imagine Reno Sparks area to be, I don't know. Maybe this sounds like an asshole thing to say, but like super interested in German style lagers.
Yeah, we actually have a little lager brewery in town that's really good.
Really?
They do a killer Pilsner and black lager.
Those are always.
He also has a hazy on the board.
Of course,
you got to keep the lights on. But Reno has a better beer scene than most people would imagine. We have a little sour. We have a sour brewery.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, Imbibe. They do good beers. You know, there's some lagers, some barrel sours. Couple hours.
To be fair, I haven't been to Reno in like 20 years, but like I was saying beforehand, yeah. That's sort of what the romanticism of Reno. It sort of is, mm-hmm. you know, like a dive bar, but it's not. There's a lot yeah. going on in Reno.
Well, there's a lot of those, but
yeah, it's, that's what I like about it, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
This is great. This is a really good fest beer, man. Yeah, like I said, great. The yeast esters and phenols are great. Did a very good job with that. I really like that. So you're doing a Doppelbock also.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's going to be big too. Anything else in the spring, summer that you guys are planning ahead lager wise?
Yeah, we're going to do after the Doppelbock of Vienna, and we're going to do a collab with Pigeon Head. That's our local lager brewery.
Okay. I think it sounds familiar, but maybe I'm thinking of something else.
And then after that, I think we're going to do a Dunkel. And the Doppelbock and the Dunkel are going to be collabs with Mammoth.
Okay, sure.
Brewing.
Makes sense.
I don't know if we're allowed to call it a collab because it's technically the same company, but they're 4 hours away, so it's far enough to where
yeah.
I think it counts.
Yeah. Sure, man.
Yeah, we'll do a Bohemian Pilsner for a summer release, and then back to the Oktoberfest.
Nice. And just keep it going. Anything else? You doing like a maybe Mexican lager train or... or anything like that seems to be pretty
not rough. That'll go through the lager tank. So all of these beers are gonna spend 2 to 2.5 months in our lagering tank.
Yeah. I feel like you gotta do it, especially with beers like this, you know?
Yeah. We do a Italian Pilsner every once in a while.
Oh, okay.
It's great. It's my new favorite beer style.
It is good. I don't see too many of them. I think I maybe can count on one hand, even at like beer festivals when those mm-hmm. used to happen. When I used to go to those. You don't see them anywhere, really.
There should be more.
I agree. All right, Thomas. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll jump into the other beers, and we'll talk some IPAs, and we have a peanut butter stout that I've never had a peanut butter stout before. I know they're out there. Never even come across one, so I'm sort of excited to try that one. To be completely honest with you.
So cool. Sounds good.
Yeah, so we'll do that. So hang on just a second. It's the session, everyone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're listening to the Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck.
All right, thanks for hanging on, everyone. It's the session. We're back with Lead Dog Brewing. We got Thomas on the line here. Thomas, I'm going to jump into, I guess, the Citra Solo.
Okay.
Because the other one is it's too bright. Because the other one's a double or whatever. There you go. That's a good mm-hmm. one. And then while I pour this, I was thinking about talking about the merger and everything like that. And I read a little article about it that you're doing so many numbers, you're doing so much growth that when the merger happened, you didn't have to lay anybody off. In fact, you've actually increased employee count by like, I want to say it was like 12 or 20% or something like that.
Yeah, there's definitely some growth. We went from, you know, filling fermenters halfway, you know, doing single batches to this summer, we maxed out our production capacity. So we were able to went from doing, you know, packaging, I don't know, around 100 barrels a week to 240 barrels a week kind of overnight.
God.
You know, there was some turnover, you know, last spring with, I think that was all before the merger happened with some of the production staff. And then I think some of the bar staff, there was some turnover there. But I did hear, I went down to, we have a homebrew shop around the corner and I was down chatting with those guys. And, you know, one of the homebrew clubs was there and, you know, saying how everybody was laid off. The entire staff was let go.
Oh, you got townie rumors. Okay. Let's hear it.
Oh yeah.
Everyone was laid off. Just the
everyone was laid off, when they bought it. And then,
That big, you know, mammoth conglomerate
came in and changed all the recipes, and everything is different now, and beer tastes different. And I'm like, well, I don't know. We haven't changed a single recipe in, you know, the past 7 months. So,
well, you're clearly wrong. I mean, what do you know, Thomas? You know,
it's true. Very true.
Absolutely. It's funny because, you know, I don't know, craft beer fans, myself, probably on the top of the list, are very protective about shit we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's a perceived change of like, mm-hmm. well, this has to be different now because it's not the same thing that I've known. So something's different. When I taste this beer, I'm already going to know that, well, I know it's different because it's not owned by the same people. So, you know what I mean? Like, it can't be my palate misremembering or what I'm eating with the beer. It has to be, there's a conspiracy theory behind every malt of grain or grain of malt. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, you know, they just want their local breweries that they like to succeed. And it's like a red flag, you know, when they get bought up or they merge with somebody. Because, you know, that's the company they like. It's like the product they like. They like the employees there. And, you know, they're just worried that it's going to change for the negative.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, I mean, I have friends in the industry that work for other, you know, sellout breweries, and you know, usually when breweries merge, it's positive for one, the beer, because you know there's more money to do more quality control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either start a lab or, you know, add lab equipment or hire, you know, an actual lab scientist, and you know, you get better equipment, you can fix things, just because there's, you know, usually a little bigger budget. Health insurance gets a little better, or offered for the first time, you know, in some cases pay gets a little better. So, you know, from like an employee standpoint, it's usually for the better. You know, I have heard of places, you know, moving all of their production elsewhere, and, you know, some people get laid off, which sucks for everybody. Like, I've, you know, I've been laid off before. I've been fired before. Like, it sucks, you know, and nobody likes losing their job.
No.
Even if it's like, I got fired in high school and it was some stupid job, and it was, you know, it still sucked. I didn't care about the job and I hated the job, but it still sucked, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Getting fired.
I feel like you've done something wrong, and it's like, it's not really usually the case. I mean, I don't know. Smoking pot in the walk-in probably isn't a good thing, but.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's not good business. Yeah, that is, it is interesting. And I wonder if it's because, you know, when breweries started to be bought out, it was, well, at least when we heard about it, it was from the big guys, from AB, from, mm-hmm. you know, Miller Coors or whatever. And that's never good, especially if you're tied into the craft beer side of like how hard it is to compete as a craft brewer against big breweries like that, and sort of the tactics that, it's all in the news. I mean, you know, AB has been sued a couple times for their distribution nonsense, and rightly so.
That's what people should really be focusing is. Right. The distribution side of things. It's not the brewing side. It's, you know, your local brewery wants to sell its cans and they're competing. They have to go through a Bud House or a Coors House, and they're just a number. They're a name on a list of 50 other breweries, you know, all fighting for that one shelf space. And, you know, what incentives can, you know, some of these other breweries offer that, you know, you can't afford to do, you know?
Yeah. But I think now, especially with the pandemic, you know, you do see a lot of small breweries merging together, or mm-hmm. either like mid-tier, mid-sized conglomerates, I guess, or groups of companies maybe absorbing another brewery here or there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's as big of a deal as, you know, here's AB snatching another brewery, or here's like a big international, here's Heineken snatching a brewery, or you know, those kinds of mm-hmm. things, I think. And so I wonder if we get nervous about our local place being bought up or merged with another brewery because we've heard so many horror stories, true or untrue, it doesn't matter anymore,
mm-hmm.
about like Heineken or AB picking up people and go, well, the Goose Island is not the same. I hear that. I still hear that. Goose Island IPA just isn't the same anymore. I'm like, but that was like 15 years ago, dude. You should let it go. You should get over it.
Yeah, it shouldn't be the same. I mean, you should be continually trying to stay current and stay relevant with your recipes and your beer, right?
Bro, that's actually a very good counter to that. I've never heard that as a counter argument. Like, it should be different. Things should change.
Yeah, breweries that have the same beer that made them super popular back in 2012, like, they're not doing well these days, you know?
Yeah.
They're, except, you know, planning second locations and, you know, having to back out of them. And
not good.
All that stuff. And I'm not on social media much these days, but
good.
I'm just wondering, oh, yeah, it's toxic, but, you know, with the New Belgium going to Kirin, cause I mean, they were like the forefront of employee ownership and
mm-hmm.
craft everything. And then, you know, they sold to, and that was, the employees voted for that. That wasn't like the boardroom. I mean, the employees voted to sell. So I wonder what sort of blowback they've gotten.
I remember, cause I talked about it a couple times on the show. It was heavy especially because Kirin is Lion, owned by Lion or something, I think also. And then they were giving money to like the military in Myanmar or something
Yeah.
Which is not a good look for a hippie brewery to be involved in like this conflict. But then really? that group just bought friggin' Bell's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you. Luckily, the Myanmar stuff has sort of, you know, logged out of the news cycle. So I don't think they're getting it as heavy as New Belgium has. But that's the part to me where I don't get where you know, if your brewery is like really conscientious about marketing their lifestyle or their thing, and then you sell to like a bigger company, it does seem mm-hmm. a little weird to me. But like two locals coming together, or, you know, just, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me like it normally would.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
yeah. So far it's been a happy merger. I mean, the Mammoth guys are great to work with. They're super easy to work with. And,
Mammoth. Cool. We were up there, man. We got treated like kings. So bless mm-hmm. the Mammoth people for sure. You have my blessing is what I'm saying, Thomas. Just let everybody know at the next meeting. Citra Solo. Tell me about Citra Solo, please.
So this is our flagship IPA, like West Coast style, all Citra hops, as the name implies. I don't know what else to say about it. You know,
man,
like,
that's it.
You know, we're trying to keep it, you know, we just did some selection on Citra hops. Honestly, I used to really not like Citra hops, because, you know, we were getting Citra on the open market, and it took really this beer for me to really, really like Citra hops. I'm not a big IPA drinker, you know, in my personal life. And so I kind of tended to stay away from it. But yeah, I didn't realize what a huge difference selection makes, like being able to select your hops. Instead of just getting like the catty, astringent hop characteristics, you know, we can get more like bright citrus. Like, to me, this beer tastes like orange rind, like it smells, or a grapefruit rind.
Yeah.
Like super citrusy, kind of bright.
Yeah. So a couple things. Hop selection, I have heard, it sort of is a make or break thing, but I guess it's hard for me, having never really done it from a standpoint of like, look, I've done the song and dance where you take the hops and you rub them and you go, and you sniff them and you're like, yeah, this smells great. But I've never had to then use those for the rest of the year. You know what I mean? So I think I'm missing a portion of that experience about why it matters so much.
And just having because I think they sent us four or five different crop samples,
mm-hmm.
and trying them next to each other, I mean, you could see this huge difference. You know, one was, you know, a lot of hay and grass, and then some were like really pungent, kind of like overripe fruit. Some were just bright citrus. So even just seeing it next to each other, like, oh, holy shit. Yeah, this is, it's a real thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? You said you're not an IPA drinker in your real life. What kind of styles do you gravitate towards?
I like Brett beers and lagers.
Okay. I could deal with that. Lagers, man. You can't beat a lager. I'm the same way. I don't really vibe well with IPA unless it has the word celebration in it and it comes from Sierra Nevada. That's it. Mm-hmm. But this beer is good. And okay. I feel weird saying that because I've sort of been saying it, I don't know, not a lot, but I've said it more often than I want to about IPAs. But this one, I get your like grapefruit rind, but it's like a candied grapefruit rind. Mm-hmm. There's a sweetness to it in the body that I think it changes the flavor. Well, that's a stupid thing to say. Don't say that. It sort of elevates the body a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think go ahead.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is like the OG recipe, but I feel like it's more balanced. It has a little more balance to it than, you know, some of the other West Coast out there that are just more like bitter driven and
yes,
super dry.
Yeah. And I would have a hard time calling it a West Coast IPA. And again, I'm just a guy who sits in his house all day. Like, I don't know anything from anything, but because of I've been doing this since 2005. So I've seen the sort of rise and plateau of the West Coast IPA. And for me, West Coast IPA is like single malt, super fucking bitter, really hoppy flavor. And then that's just kind of it. But this has a lot of dimension. It's almost like a late 90s IPA, but more bitter and less sweet. But there is still that residual sweetness at the end there that matches really well with the Citra. I don't really have an opinion on Citra too much. You know, it's hard for me. Hop flavors are sort of hard for me. I'm a fucking stout and lager guy. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? What's the malt bill in this? Did you already tell me?
Hero for the base. Vienna, a little Munich 2.
Okay. Yeah,
and
yeah,
then,
yeah.
And then like some dextrin in there.
Okay. I feel like there's definitely like higher caramel, higher than 2-row.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that works really well for a beer like this. I think you guys have done this really well, because this is an IPA that I would not, because I'll go to a bar. Well, you know, when that was a thing for me, and I'll, you know, I look by ABV and I look by style. You know, I'm a low ABV guy, so the ABV would be like, I don't know. But if I had nothing else to, this is going to sound like an insult. Here's my thing, Thomas, is I tend to say shit that sounds like insult, but it's not. So hopefully you can understand that. But I would drink this beer. I would order this beer and be like, okay, look, I know it's almost, you know, 6.4%, which isn't bad for an IPA, honestly. I would be happy with it as an IPA, which I would never do, ever.
Yeah, I'm not a big I don't really ever drink IPAs, but I usually have one or two like kicking around in my fridge. And, you know, after I've drank all the Pilsners and Oktoberfest and Hellas's, I'm like, I'll drink one of these. And so
I think you might have confused my life with yours for a second, but I feel like maybe I should, if a beer can get me to relax on the IPA ban that I have in my head, again, unless it's Celebration, it would be one of these. I genuinely enjoyed the drinking this beer.
Sweet. Thanks. Yeah. When I moved from Fort Collins, where you could go to the store and be like, all right, I want a Saison. What six different Saisons do I choose from, to Bend, Oregon, where, you know, you go to a bar, if they have 15 taps, 13 are IPAs, one's a Coors Light and one is a Black Butte Porter from Deschutes. And so it really burned me out on all things IPA, all things hoppy. And now, you know, I like pale ales a lot, but, you know, they're
hard to go wrong.
Kind of.
They really are, man. What is that about? I mean, you make beer for a living, for God's sake. What is that about certain styles? I don't know. I feel like pale ale, for example, isn't really a broad style, but the interpretations of pale ale can be very, very broad. And I guess I don't, I was just more of a commentary, I guess, on it. Rather than
I don't know. I mean, Dale's Pale Ale is like 6%.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, 6.5% honestly, like,
or something.
Yeah. And that's one of the OGs. And I drank it once or twice and it was good, but it was too much for me.
Yeah. Well, like all their beers are like, they make really, I haven't had their beer in a long, since I left Colorado, but I did an internship there when I was in school for the summer. And like, pulling beer out of the employee beer pile, might be like a 7-8% beer that drank like a 6% beer.
Wow.
I just felt like that was their shtick. I mean, I don't know what they're making now, but, it was dangerous. All their beers were really smooth, but just super fucking boozy. And
well, and I think that was the early mid 2000s, honestly. You know, you had the IBA chase and you also had the ABV chase as well. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to hide the ABV.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, in my opinion, right? And so you have these beers that are like, how can we make this drink like a 6% but be 8% or 9% or whatever? You know, that was sort of whenever we give that compliment out in the, you know, mid 2000s or whatever, it's always like, yeah, you know, we're trying to do this thing or whatever. But I would imagine everyone is sort of transitioning to lagers, or will be soon, at least introducing one or two. I wouldn't say dropping the ABV on their flagships, because there are people who still want that. I mean, I have friends who literally just go by ABV, like, oh, that's higher. That's a higher IPA than this one by 0.5%. So I'll just go with that IPA. All right. I mean, cool. Whatever you want to do. But
I think we're all just getting older. Like all the people that kind of came up, started drinking in, you know, the 2000s. And now we're like, God, I'm like, I'm in my 30s. I can't do that.
Can't do it anymore, bro.
It hurts.
Yeah. That's why I'm sort of all in on this non-alcoholic train.
Yeah, I think I wrote that stuff down. I'm gonna look for it around Reno.
You should, man.
Give it a shot.
Yeah, the Lagunitas IPNA. It's okay if you like the hop water or the hoppy refresher or whatever. You'll like the flavor, but for me, and again, I don't know if it's how it was treated over, but it's a little grassy. But that's fine. I mean, a lot of people like that in IPA. It's good. The Heineken 0.0. That's the one you want if you like lagers and you don't want to get, you know, drunk. Yeah, Heineken 00. But I was at BevMo the other day, and there are a lot more non-alcoholic craft beers than I ever really knew about. I had a weird time. I just had a weird, uncomfortable moment in the corner of BevMo, going, "I don't, you know, Old Milwaukee.
Where am I?"
Yeah, Old Milwaukee have a non-alcoholic beer. Bush apparently have a non-alcoholic, but yeah, but and if it was in a, here's the thing, if it was in a six pack, I would have picked some up, because I like an Old Milwaukee. There, it has a good, you know, it's kind of a sweeter thing. But I don't think I could do a 12 rack. That's too much. It's too much of a commitment for me, as I'm holding the 12 of Heineken 0.0. Yeah, I feel like the checkout lady was I was a little confused, because I had that, and then I had like some East Brother oatmeal stout and some like local, I don't know, a bunch of weird shit.
Well, you know, as like the I think more people start doing seltzers, I haven't ever done it or tried it, but I think there's like a filter out there where you can filter out the alcohol out of the beer, and then it just leaves the beer. So like you have two streams, you have two product streams out of that. So you can like make your seltzer or like an RTD even, out of your alcohol stream, and then you have all the leftover stuff from the beer.
It filters out the alcohol.
Yeah, I can't remember what kind of filtration it is.
Magic filtration.
Magic. It's science.
Wow, that's okay. Wild.
Yeah.
Because I know there's a few different ways to do it. I imagine it's like some sort of enzyme related. But then you're talking changing flavors, and, you know, I don't know, you got to brew around that, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I when I took the IBD, I learned it and then instantly forgot it. So I was like, I'm never going to fucking do this. Like, who does that, you know?
What do you think now? Is non-alcoholics going to be,
It could. Yeah, it could. I mean, if it's a big brewery, you know, I'd say 40, 50 barrels and up. And if they want to get serious about, like, making NA beers and seltzers, then.
Yeah. I mean, for you guys.
Oh, for us?
Is that a market you would ever jump into? It seems like it was seltzer, like, you know, 5 years ago. It seems to be increasing rapidly.
Mammoth does a seltzer. They do some seltzers, but not a ton. We just did our first seltzer, just a small batch, like 15 barrels. We did a 12% like imperial seltzer, because one of the local bars does like a tap takeover.
Okay.
And it's called Jupiter Fest, and it's everything is 10% and up. And I got the email. God. It made it through the email chain down to me like a week and a half before. And I was like, well, shit, I can't do anything, but we have a bunch of dextrose and like some distiller's yeast. I was like, well, let's just do like a 12% seltzer. So we did like a Sex on the Beach flavoring. Okay. So it's called Seltz on the Beach. And it's boozy. It tastes like a cocktail. We recommend people serve it over ice.
Yeah.
And we put it in some distributors wanted it in 19.2s. So we put it in some 19.2s, and good luck to whoever drinks one of those, man.
Wow.
Yeah. So we'll see. We're releasing it this week, and we'll see. We'll see if it sells. I mean, if it's a hit, then we would do another one. If not, it was only a 15 barrel batch.
It happened.
It's cheap to make. It's just sugar water and like a little fruit puree.
Yeah, and like some tank time, but who cares?
Yeah, we don't really use our 15 barrel tanks all that often. So, but God. Yeah, salt on the beach. It's boozy.
Okay, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
All right, next beer is Acropolis, which, you know,
we're getting into the hype zone a little bit.
Getting into the hype zone. Yeah, it's a Swole Zeus, which I imagine you use my pictures on the internet to model it after.
Naturally, yeah.
Acropolis is a, let's say, Northeast style double IPA. Northeast, I imagine, is like New England style because, I mean, it's hazy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's a hazy boy with, I think it's, I don't have the recipe in front of me, but mostly Mosaic hop in it. I think a little Amarillo in the dry hop. And we just released this last week, I think, in our tap room and got it out. So it was one of the fresher beers we had, one of the fresher hazies. And I want to send you out a hazy because we do a lot of like hazy IPAs. We try to do like small batches and then do more of them just to get like more variety and try to keep it fresh. Because, you know, after it's a month old, 2 months old, then, you know, the hop character just drops right off of it.
Yeah.
We are going to start doing some fun things in our brew house. We're going to start cold pooling. So
what's cold pooling?
Yeah. So from the boil kettle to the whirlpool, we're going to run the wort through our heat exchanger and cool it down to 180 degrees. So that way it stays sterile, but it's not as hot. So you just keep a little bit more of those aromatic compounds.
Okay. So it's not a whirlpool. It's a cold pool.
It's a cold pool.
Did you make that up? Did you guys make that up? That name?
No. That's the thing out there, but it'd be a good beer name to work in.
It really would. That should be your first, cold pooling. Okay, so you're bringing it down to 180, then going into your whirlpool, and so you can do your whirlpool additions at 180.
All right. The tip out there for all the homebrewers. It's how you get more juiciness out of it.
Really? Okay. I guess, you know, there's a difference between, you know, 210 or 212 and 180. I mean, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. We've never tried it. I've never tried it. So we're...
Give it a shot.
We're brewing our 5th anniversary beer here soon, so it's going to be hazy double IPA, double dry hop IPA. We're going full hazy hype mode for
it. You got to do it, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you want it to sell. So I don't have, like, you know, the only experience I have with these beers is on these shows, and I don't, my vocabulary is a little off for some of these beers. What am I? Can you help me describe this beer to people who actually know what they're talking about?
Yeah, it's like a little fuller mouthfeel. We're going for that kind of pillowy, full mouthfeel. And then it's just not as bitter as, you know, a normal IPA. And I feel like that's why a lot of people like hazy IPAs, is they're not as bitter.
Yeah.
But you still get all that like awesome West Coast hop and New Zealand hop aroma out of it, or like just fruit bombs, you know, tropical citrus fruit bombs. And they're just more drinkable because they're not as bitter.
Right. And, you know, look, I've gone on record ranting about hazy IPAs and hazy beers in general, especially when you start coming into pale ales and lagers and stuff. I just I don't want to deal with it. But my whole thing is, like, if you like IPAs, then drink an IPA. But if a hazy IPA, I don't think should be classified as an IPA. But now it's a whole style, so my rant is irrelevant. But
it's like the style, you know.
I know, right? I mean, this definitely hits all those points. It's definitely pillowy and round. I do like the aroma. That's the thing about these beers, is they are very inviting if you have it, you know, if you have it covered up. Like a red solo cup, and you can just smell it. They are very, very inviting. They're very fruit forward. A little bit of, I want to say grassy, but I don't mean grassy. I mean more floral, I guess, is what I mean. Like actual, like, floral hops. Yeah, they always smell great. So you said there's Mosaic.
Mosaic and Amarillo in the dry hop. And then in the brew house, there's a third hop in there. Maybe some Simcoe. I can't remember off the top of my head. But I feel like those are like just your standard run-of-the-mill IPA hops, like the Sam hops.
Okay. I imagine hazy IPAs go over pretty well out there.
Oh, yeah. there's another brewery in town that they make a shitload of hazy IPAs, and that's like what they're known for. And I think they're the biggest, well, it's Nevada, so it's a little lower of a bar, but I think they're the biggest brewery in Nevada. And I think we're second at, you know, 12,000 barrels a year. So we're not, Nevada's not a big brewery state yet.
Okay. Yeah. It's getting there though. It sounds like
it's getting there. I mean, there's like two cities pretty much. So
yeah,
like Vegas and Reno and
yeah, maybe Carson, but yeah, you know, even then Carson City isn't, it should just be Reno.
Yeah. As long as no one here hears me say that here, like, yeah, it's basically all Reno.
I love it, man. Okay. Well, I like this beer. It's a hazy
IPA.
It's a hazy double IPA, man. What do you expect? It definitely ticks all the boxes for that. Mm-hmm. You know, you got that pillowy mouthfeel. You got the malt is, you know, there's sweetness there to it. It's not super dry at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do a little higher mash temp than we would for like a just clear IPA. Mm-hmm. You know, just give it that little bit of that sweetness. And
it's a nice orange rind. And mm-hmm. what I do is I like to find like the weirdest, most bizarre, you know, descriptors. But it's like those big fucking oranges. You know, like,
oh, like the Valencia.
Yeah, like they're huge, and they're almost too ripe to peel. Mm-hmm. That's the juice that that's the peel citrus oil that I get. You know, coming from this, it's like that kind of style where it's
That's good. That's good. That's deep. I don't know. Yeah,
I got a gift. I'm a super taster, Thomas. I don't know if you knew that. I'm classified myself as a super taster. I was gonna be on the X-Men, but they wouldn't. You know, I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, it's like an alternate.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a backup, dude. I'm a DH for Wolverine. Whenever he can't perform, I come in and try to taste the shit out of things and blow people's minds. And they go, "What? Weird." And they can't fight.
Yeah.
Good beer. I like it.
Great. Thanks.
I like it. It's very balanced and it's very, it's not leaning one way or the other. You know, sometimes these can get chalky. That's not chalky. The hop flavor comes all the way through. The aromatics are nice. If you're looking for a double hazy IPA, this is exactly what I would imagine you would want.
Yeah, that's what we're going for. Just your standard double hazy IPA.
Standard stuff, man. I like it. All right, we're going to take a quick break, everybody. We're going to come back and we're going to try a peanut butter stout and we're going to try an apricot milkshake sour, neither of which I've had before. So this is going to be a good time. Hang on, everybody. This is Lead Dog Brewing here on The Session. We'll be right back.
Tuned into The Session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right, thanks for hanging on, everybody. We're going to try a couple beers, like I said, that I've never had before. I'm imagining the apricot milkshake sour would be first in this tasting. Right, Thomas?
That's what I would do.
Okay. I've never uttered those words before. Or that sentence. I'm about to drink an apricot milkshake sour. This is called Savage. And this is like a line of beers you do, right?
Yep. We put one out every one a quarter, you know, maybe a little more than that. But we can do 60 barrels of kettle sour at a time. And it shuts our brew house down for like a day or two. So we try to keep it, you know, that's the most we can do.
60 barrels of kettle sour at a time. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And I feel like this is a good entry into the milkshake world. It's not super sweet.
Milkshake sour. Yeah, because usually it's milkshake IPA is like what those two words really go together. So milkshake sour, I don't know that it's a thing, except it's sitting right in front of me.
We just add some lactose to it. That's the only thing that makes it, we don't add a ton either. Cause we don't, we just want to like a little more mouthfeel, like a little hint of sweetness.
Okay. I'm a little nervous cause it's a milkshake, but I'm going to try it. I'm going to do it.
There's some vanilla in there.
Oh yeah.
And the vanilla really comes out at like, the more it warms up, the more like vanilla character you'll get out of it.
Yeah, this is pretty cold. I'm going to let it warm up. But yeah, I mean, on first blush, apricot's very forward.
Mm-hmm.
Vanilla, I could get a little bit. The sour comes through right at the end. It's not, I'm imagining when it warms up, it's going to be more interconnected. This makes sense because
the vanilla really ties the room together.
Yeah, right. It's very like segment, boom, boom, boom. But I'm sure once it warms up, it's going to be, it's going to flow nicely.
Yeah, like with the sourness level, we were trying to get something that wasn't like enamel scrapingly sour.
Yeah, dude.
We just wanted it to be like drinkable, you know, by the pint. And I don't know, there's some freaks out there like me that can just drink sours all night and be super happy. but I feel like most people, you know, it's like some sourness is good, but too much can be kind of a turnoff.
Yeah. I mean, that was me like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, I can do this. It's fine. And I never got really heartburn necessarily, but I do feel like some of the sour brewers have sort of tried to dial that sourness up a notch to maybe separate themselves. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I just sort of got, I don't want to say bored with it, but maybe bored.
I like to taste,
I don't know,
the other parts of the beer too. And if it's like too sour, you know, just kind of what you get. It's kind of like a super bitter IPA. It's like the predominant thing you're tasting.
I also feel like if you're into sours, you get into fucking sours, and that's what you do. And then I think you sort of, that pendulum has to swing. I think it's few and far between the person who is casually into sours. I'm okay with it. I drink a sour every now and then. But I go like, I love it. I need to consume everything. I need to do this all the time. Okay, it's too much. And you take a break for 6 months and you discover lagers, then you never go back.
Yeah. Basically, yeah, that's where we're all going. If you haven't had a good, you know, some people just have never had like a really good lager before.
That's true.
I mean, some of the people I work with here have never had a good lager before. And I was like, oh, let me bring you some in. And they're like, oh, that's all I drink now are lagers.
And, yeah. And it's hard. And then with any style, you sort of, there's like a list of things that you can sort of are flexible on, you know, different flavors or like, this isn't my favorite, but it's a lager and that sort of like makes it okay. And I wonder if it's like, this is what it's like to be a hardcore IPA drinker where you're like, maybe it's a little cat pee, but I don't care. It's, you know, 6.8% and I'm going to chug it.
Yeah. And it's bitter.
Yeah. It's bitter. And I feel cool doing
like,
it. Yeah. Lagers are, that's where everyone's going. But you know what? I drink a ton of lagers. I love them. I was putting an order together for a Total Wine for me to pick up. And, you know, just getting a bunch of crap. And a 12-pack of Celebration, of course. And then I remembered, I don't know how I remembered, McEwen Scotch Ale. You ever have a McEwen Scotch Ale?
No.
Bro, it's like the, it's class. McEwen's.
How do you spell it?
M-C-E-W-A-N. Apostrophe S, McEwen's.
Okay.
McEwen Scotch Ale. It's the very first Scotch Ale I've ever had in my entire life in like the late 90s. And I just have one every once in a while. It's like the Celebrator Doppelbach. You pick one up every once in a while. Yeah. I haven't had a McEwen's in probably 5 years. And I don't know. I bought a 4-pack and I drank and I was like, oh man, this is good. I wonder if that lager pendulum is going to come back. You know, because again, this is how, I don't know about you, this is how I get with beers, where it's, you get super into it and you just consume all of the things and you're like, yep, I did it. Here's all the lager that I've ever had. Yeah. And then now I'm like, I've had all these. Now I'm going to find another style to do. And then you sort of like hopscotch across everything. So maybe I'm going to be in the Scotch
Ales
now.
It's like a song that you really like on Spotify. You listen to it every day going to work and every day going home. And then after, you know, a while, you're like, all right, what's next?
yeah, I gotta especially like categories on Netflix. You're like, I've consumed all the content. I feel that way on streaming. We don't have cable. It's like, I've consumed every content known to man. I can't do it anymore. I'm like, I am now ultimate guy. This is warming up and it's interesting. The vanilla isn't coming through more than it was before, but the apricot flavor is. It's more of a complete apricot flavor. Can you tell me what you did with the apricots to get all of that flavor in here?
Yeah. So initially we started not fermenting all the fruit out. So we just get drums from Oregon fruit puree, like 55-gallon drums. That seems to work well with our batch sizes, doing it in that quantity. And we just add fruit to the fermenter. And like we'd stabilize it before, so it wouldn't ferment. We wouldn't make like can bombs. You know, this was the first beer we fermented all the fruit out of it. So, you know, when it would get around, you know, 5 Play-Doh, these beers finish out at about 3.5 to 4 Play-Doh usually. That's like 10, 16 roughly.
Okay.
We would, you know, we just pump the fruit in and let it keep fermenting and just eating up all those sugars. But yeah, we just do fruit puree. We do a little recirc just to get it all into the tank, but yeah, we just let it ferment out and, you know, we would do a forced fermentation trial on it. You know, before we would pack, before we transfer it into the bright tank, just to make sure we're not going to make can bombs. So I just pull a sample, you know, put a little bubbler cap on it and, you know, take a gravity reading before and after. I'd find a nice warm spot in the brewery and just let it sit for a couple days and just to be sure.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, like when I see milkshake or milkshake sour, specifically this or whatever, I do get a little nervous because in those heady days of when these beers sort of happened, fruited sour beers were just exploding cans across the country. It wasn't just one brewery, it was several breweries. And I just always get nervous about it, especially with home brewers. Like I get some home brews delivered for a homebrew judging show we have called Dr. Homebrew. And because I've had a bottle blow up in my face before, like literally like holding it up and it exploded. And it's like, that was not okay. And I'm very, very gun shy because you can hold like a brown bottle up and you go, oh, that's cloudy. I'm going to, you know, I need those like tongs that bomb the unit has. Yeah, you know,
at least you have glasses, you know, there's like some level of protection.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that'd mess you up if you had a bottle explode like right in your face.
Oh, bro. I'm not saying PTSD, but you know, I need, I need some pills. No, like the glass like cut me like right by my eye. It was a moment. I had a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and like the big breweries, they can afford to have like tunnel pasteurizers and like stabilize their beer that way. But I think using sorbate is becoming more accepted out there in the craft world.
Uh-huh. Potassium sorbate.
Yeah. It just stops the yeast from multiplying. It doesn't stop fermentation at all.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, it's definitely not like Reinheitsgebot, and I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that don't consider it craft, but I know lots of craft breweries that use it. So
how do you not consider it?
If you're
going to
add French fries and cheeseburgers and waffles and macaroni and cheese to beer, you can like stabilize your beer with some sorbate. Like,
right.
It's not Munich and, you know, the 1700s.
Yes. And you know what? Reinheitsgebot was all about taxes anyways.
Yeah, it's so, pure economic reasons.
Like, right, exactly.
Shit about
like, so if
what
you're,
you put in your beer.
If you're a libertarian out there and you fucking, I don't know. I mean, these people also consume McDonald's french fries, which has 18 ingredients in it. It's not just french fries. Yeah, for sure.
They'll never mold. Like, you can just let it sit out there for years.
Yeah.
Just sit there.
That's right. Yeah, the meat. Yeah. And I read somewhere it's like the low moisture content. Like, because the patties are so thin.
Uh-huh.
That the moisture evaporates pretty suddenly, and then there's not a whole lot of moisture to like trap like mold and like mold grow on it, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's like food made by science. Like if I was like a food scientist, it'd be super fun to make.
Yeah.
I want to eat it, but it'd be cool to make.
Well, there's a chef, Kenji Lopez Alt. I always forget his name, but he did like a whole test on, he actually like made smash burgers like that, like McDonald's patties like that, super thin to do like that mold thing. And he goes, yeah, mine didn't mold either, but they're like fresh ground. Yeah. So it's
cool.
Yeah. It's, to me, it's even cooler, right? Because that is the science of like, well, there's the moisture content so low. The patties are so thin. It just doesn't,
it's good.
Look at us. Look at us talking about food. I like this beer, man. This is really cool. This is a different flavor. It's very good. It's almost like a pack of dried apricots. You know, sometimes you get the tart one and sometimes you get the really sweet one and sometimes you get the one that's crunches and that's weird. And they're just sort of different in the package based on the apricot size or whatever. That's sort of the vibe I'm getting out of this glass. Because you
cool, thanks. Yeah.
It's a very rounded apricot flavor.
I'm all about balance. when I try to make recipes. And so I was really going for something that, you know, it had a little bit of that like sweetness from the lactose, but nothing really outpaced one another. Like the fruit wasn't too much. The sweetness isn't too much. The sourness isn't too much. You know, for my 10 barrel days, you know, I worked, Tanya Cornett from Ben Brewing Company.
Yeah.
Well, she's been with 10 barrel forever now, but, I mean,
she's
making
cool.
like crush all the crushes, like the cucumber crush, and like she does an Imperial Berliner Weiss, which is like one of the best beers I've ever had.
Wow.
And so I was like, oh, I gotta do sours and like at least try to, you know, live up to Tanya's standard.
I think you
did
it.
Like sour.
Yeah, I think you'd hit it, man. And it's almost, I want to say like the milkshake sort of does a disservice, but that's my own bias.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm sure
I'm
sure that's exactly what you want to put on the label so people actually buy it. You know what I mean? And it is sort of the same, you know, process. You're adding lactose, and I totally get everything. And it makes me again want to sort of like not think that, you know, milkshake is a, you know, some kind of four-letter word.
Yeah. And you know, initially I wanted to just do a straight Berliner Weiss style, and the old owner Ryan, he was the brewmaster, he was like, you know what, let's make it a milkshake, let's add a little bit of lactose. I was like, I don't know, could fuck it all up. Let's not do this. He's like, no, do it. And yeah, he was right. And I was like, all right, yeah, it's not bad. And you know, that definitely fits with kind of our branding too, and like the kind of the beers that we do. It's, you know, we're riding the hype train, you know, I'll admit it.
Hey, it's all right, man.
But okay. You know, we're making lagers. We're making like good, respectable beers now.
See,
we have a lagering tank. So,
and I've
happy.
Always said that's what makes it okay.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a hype train brewery or whatever, whatever, but you throw a lager or two in there and it's really good, like that Fest beer, and all sins are forgiven. That's your confessional.
Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about it.
Is your lager. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, look, forgive me, Father, for I have made 15 milkshake IPAs since my last lager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The brewers are always like, can we do a sour without lactose in it? And I'm like, well, no. when we put a pub system back in our tap room, then we can make whatever we want. But
yeah,
the Savage is here to stay.
It's cool. I mean, the logo's rad. The lettering is cool. Mm-hmm. It's a cool concept. I like it.
Cool. Thanks.
Peanut butter stout. Now, what am I doing with my life that I'm sitting here in Oakley drinking a peanut butter stout? Besides living it to its fullest potential.
You're riding the pastry train now.
This
Next
is
thing a, you know, you're going to be getting like a raspberry chocolate milkshake sprinkle stout.
I will sacrifice myself on the altar of celebration ale before I ever do that. Tell me about this beer, man. Why peanut butter stout? What's going on here? What's wrong with you? Are you guys okay? Is this a cry for help?
I inherited it.
Okay.
When I got here, but
I'm totally joking.
It's not super sweet.
It's a jar. I have a jar of dry roasted peanuts in my house. It smells exactly like that.
Yeah, and but it's basically like an oatmeal stout. Like we put a shitload of oats in it. And you know, it's your kind of standard stout, and then we add some peanut butter extract and vanilla to it, and here we are, the peanut butter stout.
Thomas, it's actually good, dude. I don't know what you're, it's actually tastes good.
Yeah, it's not too, I think the I've had some other ones out there and they're just way too sweet, but we try to damp down the sweetness to it, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say, I feel like peanut butter itself, or, you know, the peanuts, right? It inherently could be dry as shit, you know? And my fear would be that you would get some sort of dryness out of it. Like you would have to add sweetness back, or was there anything like that when you're?
Yeah, we had a bag of lactose in the brew.
Okay. All right.
And you know, our mash temp is, just your kind of standard stout mash temp, like 153, 154, somewhere in there.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a great stout. I actually wish we packaged just the stout.
I love oatmeal stout, dude. That's my favorite style. I've been working on one for 10 years and I still can't perfect it, but.
Oh man, especially this time of year, as soon as it starts to cool off. Oh man. Like forget pumpkin spice lattes. It's like, it's stout season.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Stouts are our PSLs or mm-hmm. whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is good, man. And you know what? There's a tannin effect, and I'm not going to say tannin isn't like, I don't know. There's several types of tannins, I think, in my mind, as far as how they relate to a beer, where you mm-hmm. can sort of taste it, where it's like too tanniny, and it's almost mm-hmm. it almost has a flavor to it.
Yeah, which it's makes like, no it's sense. Like tongue depressor almost.
Yes, like, right. Yeah. But this isn't it. It is a moisture sucker at the end, mm-hmm. but a respectable amount, because sometimes oatmeal stouts can be a little too sweet and you want something mm-hmm. to, you know, clean that up and remove that from your mouth. But this does a really good job of sort of providing all of that roundness and that richness of the stout and the peanut butter. The vanilla, I'm not getting too much, which is fine. But because mm-hmm. I understand it can be more of an accent. But like at the end, it sort of does come through with a little bit of that tannin nuttiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to kind of like wipe your palate off.
And, yeah.
Yeah, and like with the vanilla, it's really easy to add way too much vanilla to a beer. So yeah. If you can just barely get a little bit, that's it. That's all you need. Unless you're making like a vanilla milkshake beer, I guess. Or yeah, well, I know somebody's done it. Somebody's done it.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. I mean, if it's in the name, it has to be present. You know, it's like what we tell people on Dr. Homebrew. Like, if you want to submit this as a whatever, if you name it, I have to taste it.
Right. Yeah.
If it's in the label, I want to taste it. If it's not, then, don't worry about it. Which is why I can't drink them. I can't find the milkshakes in your apricot sour. I don't understand. But no, I'm kidding. Yeah, man, it's good. And like thinking about it, I can sort of, I mean, I can get some of the vanilla. Maybe it's just because it's warming up, or maybe because we're talking about it. But it's not obtrusive, and I like that. I think it's a good, it's just a good little flavor boost.
Yeah, that's all we're going for with it, just to kind of prop up the peanut butter and.
Yeah, that aroma is great, man. So how does a town like Reno? How does your distribution network take to a beer like this? It's a pretty funky beer.
Like surprisingly well. Like this, in the summer, like Citra Sola is our number one brand, but we're kind of transitioning right now, and peanut butter until, March or April, this is going to be our number one brand that we're brewing in the brew house.
This be peanut butter stout.
Yep. Yeah.
Is your number one through March or April?
Yep. During the winter, this is it. This is our number one. Like we go from brewing like a 60 barrel batch, maybe once every 6 weeks in the summer, to doing like a 90 barrel batch every month in the winter. So.
But you brew this during the summer also?
Mm-hmm.
This is a year round.
Surprisingly well, especially like in Reno where it's like 100 fucking degrees out.
Right. Probably right now.
Yeah. It's actually chilly now. It's nice. Okay. It's really nice. Good. Yeah. There's no smoke.
Dude.
It's just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I think it's good, man. Do you have a flagship beer? Are the flagship beers gone? The days of flagship beers gone? Or do you guys sort of have
I mean, we have a core. So what Lee Dog has always done is kind of taken that modern times model of having a lot of releases and just mm-hmm. I think of it as like a pub style. Like, yes. Pubs, they just crank out a million different styles.
Yeah.
But Lee Dog did that, but on more of a production scale. So we just really leaned into that with like hazy IPAs, mostly the hazy IPAs and like some pastry stouts, where we're doing like one a month.
Wow.
And like out in the stores, it's like when that for that SKU, it's like when beer A is done, beer B is right behind it, and that's seemed to work really well. But we have we're cutting our core year-round beers down from 7 down to 4 next year. And so it'll be the Citra, the peanut butter. We do a blonde. And then like a wheat beer with a tangerine, like a tangerine wheat beer.
Okay. Nice.
And that's it. Everything else is going to be rotational. So we have an IPA series and we're going to do one a month, and that's just going to be like all encompassing. So we'll do hazies, doubles. We do a couple milkshakes throughout the fruited milkshakes throughout the year. We do two, not a ton, but and then, you know, we have a double IPA that we do year round. And then, you know, the sours are rotational, 4 year. Pastry stouts are 4 year. Lagers are 4 or 5 a year. So we're just really leaning hard into rotating it, keeping it fresh, keeping it new. Like, I think these days consumers, we're so used as consumers to going and trying new things. There's always new things to try. I think the days of being a one beer drinker are kind of over.
I think so too. You know? Yeah, I agree. I mean, it sounds like you guys are planning, I mean, definitely months out, but almost sounds like, you know, a year out.
This is what's going to happen. 2022 release calendar planned out. You know, there's a couple TBDs in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want to get too locked into something. Who knows what hot new style is going to come out in the summertime. It could be like
chili beers are coming back. Let's do it.
Oh God, please no.
I've actually had one really good chili beer, and I think it was a Rogue beer, actually.
Oh
yeah. Who would have thought? I don't know. Chili beers are extra polarizing.
Yeah. I feel like you either hate them or
you're broken.
Yeah, they don't bother you that much, you know.
Right. Man, I like this beer. I don't know. It's that peanut butter. It's the peanut butter flavor, because it almost rides that line between peanut butter. It's like this is the most fucking smooth brain shit I've ever said, but it almost tastes like you're eating aromatics. It's very aromatic. Yeah. I wouldn't call it hyper flavor. Oh, this is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can't differentiate the smell and the taste. Maybe that's just a fault of mine, but the two play really well together.
Mm-hmm.
It smells like it tastes. I guess maybe that's the problem for me. Not the problem, but the problem with my brain. It smells the way it tastes, and I think that works really well in this for this beer.
Yeah, like nothing is too overpowering. Like sometimes it's just way too much peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
Where like you take a drink and then you go home, you eat dinner, and then you can still. I'm assuming most guys who listen to this podcast have like beards.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you can still smell it in your mustache, and, you know, hours later. So,
yeah, it's cool though, man, because you know, some beers like, oh, I wish that this aromatic would be the flavor of this, you know, especially in these hazy beers that I drank. Like, I wish that this, and not yours, but just in general on the show, this aromatic is just what I want out of a beer. I don't want it to taste the way I know it's going to taste, but this is just a very pleasant surprise. It tastes exactly the way it smells. The peanut butter does. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool.
Cool.
Are you going to pack?
Well, I'm glad your first peanut butter beer was a success.
It was a success, yeah. Are you going to package an oatmeal stout? I feel like you should.
It
tastes like
to.
A great beer underneath, man. I love an oatmeal stout. It tastes like this would really carry just well on its own.
Yeah, I'm working on sales. You know, the bigger the brewery gets, the more sales kind of runs things, so I've been twisting some arms.
Okay,
with it.
Tell him I told you to do it.
Okay, done. I'll be like, you know what, this
fucking asshole.
I've spoken to the people, and this is what they want.
Yeah. Meanwhile, all the people is just me locked in my bedroom somewhere, going, all right, this is what I think. Next, let's go. Mm-hmm. All right, Thomas. Well, where can people go to find more about Lead Dog Brewing?
That's a great question that I don't really have a good answer to.
Yeah, because I went to the website, which is leaddogbrewing.com, but it's sort of down. No, it's not down, but it's like
under construction. Yeah. So right now we're going through kind of a rebrand. I think of it as like coming out of startup phase and going into production, like the production marathon. Just with, you know, it's a brand new production facility. Most of it was during COVID. So we're still tackling a lot of problems, not problems, opportunities to be better. We'll call them.
Yeah. Tensions. There were some tensions there.
Yeah. So yeah, the website, that'll be up and running at some point. You know, we have a Facebook page. You can always reach out to info@leaddogbrewing.com. Actually, please send an email to info@leaddogbrewing.com and harass our marketing guy. and we're in Northern California, Reno area. We're going to be moving into Southern California a little more here in the next year. A little bit in Vegas. You know, we're slowly expanding. You know, it's, you know, we only have a 30 barrel brew house right now, so we have room for more tanks, but getting more tanks is kind of difficult these days with, as long as everything else.
You have an Instagram, lead dog brewing, Lead Dog Brewing, and it's very active. Yeah, there's the Seltz on the Beach ad, which is very cool.
Yeah.
Looks cool, man. Looks like a fun spot. And you know, of course, the tap room's open. So if you're right and you guys are open and everything's rolling along, I don't want to assume anything. Okay.
Yeah. So we have two locations. We have where the original pub was downtown, and our production facility is out in Spark, and we have a tap room out there. And, you know, we're at our original location downtown. We're remodeling it and, you know, getting food trucks and putting a stage in and we can do music, and you know, we're still growing and, you know, in the kind of coming out of the startup phase, you know.
Yeah,
I tend to think about it, but yeah, things are going really well. We're kind of growing and just kind of constantly improving things and making the spaces better.
Nice.
You know, and so we're just trying to, you know, keep the momentum going of like growing and improving. And
you got to do it. Yeah. Well, it sounds like, I mean, the beers are there, man. So,
thanks.
You know,
yeah, we have a
like...
great staff. They're killing it out there. You know, I just fix things and do Excel and schedule at this point. So yeah, we have a great staff, you know, packaging and warehouse and the brewers, and it's small, but you know, they crank it out.
Okay. So, excellent. That sounds cool, man.
Yeah.
Let's see. Normally I'd let you go. I have a feedback. Do you have like, well, I mean, I can let you go. How about this? I'll let you go and I'll read this little feedback I have on the air.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't have anything tonight, so.
Okay. Well, then I'll read this feedback. Thomas, I mean, I appreciate it, man. So I've always said, well, not always said, but I've said for the past couple months, if you guys have feedback, send it in, feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com. I will read it on the air because I have nothing else to do. So send feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com or jp@thebrewingnetwork.com if you want to. Send me something directly. I mean, I don't know. It goes to the same stupid place. So whatever you want to do. But this one is from Nate in Copenhagen. There's a Copenhagen. I don't know. Whatever. I guess being in California, I'm sort of sensitive to pronouncing, you know, names right that aren't in English. You know, it's like San Jose and, you know, whatever. But the Copenhagen, whatever. Who cares? Hey, dudes, the session was going pretty well for a while, but I wasn't able to finish listening to the last two. Okay, well, that's probably my fault. Athletic wasn't talking about their vacuum distillation and how they compensate for their recipes. Yeah, well, they don't do vacuum distillation. So first of all, Nate, there you go. But yeah, I mean, you know, of course they're not going to talk about how they've developed this, you know, process over years. They're not just going to give it away. And I knew that going in. I wasn't 100% sure. But yeah, you know, it's not their fault. That's they're not allowed to
proprietary stuff, you know.
Yeah, and you know, we've we're old enough on this show. This show's been around long enough to sort of transcend that moment in time where brew house secrets were kept secret, like hopping rates and hops even and how people dry hop. To now it's just everyone's helping everybody. Not now, but that's always what it was. But now it's sort of like a, I don't know about a faux pas, but it's sort of different now. We're like, oh, I can't talk about that. It's like, it's just fucking, do you dry hop cold or hot?
Like, and that's like kind of the fun part, right? Is you like, if somebody wants to try to do a clone or something, then you know, you throw like a couple tidbits out there and like let them play with it, and you know, that's how you develop as a brewer or like a home brewer,
right?
That's how you learn about ingredients,
right? And you know, the thing someone mentioned, you know, when we were going through this, I would guess 2008 2010 or whatever, I mean, we had, you know, the door really opened when Vinny came on and was just, I'm an open book about how I make Pliny. And it's like, if you can just talk about how you can make what the number one IP in the world since time began or whatever, you know, XYZ brewery in, you know, I don't know, fucking somewhere in North Dakota. You can tell me if you dry hop at, you know, 60 or 58. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's that kind of thing. And if that's the difference it's going to make someone else's brewery, then that other brewery has different problems rather than their dry hopping thing. So it shouldn't really be a thing. So anyway, I think on this show we get a little, I don't know about sensitive, but, you know, sometimes it's like you just let me know. But with a process like removing most of the alcohol out of your beer, I understand that 100%. And I thought the Atlantic guys were great. The beers were good, and I definitely recommend them. But yeah, I mean, I figured that. So, you know, that's probably my fault. For the love of God, wheel tasties, embalmed corpse, and mobile phone in at least if you can't get co-host. It ain't fair to leave JP twisting in the wind. Yeah, look, man, I understand, Nate. It's times are tough. I mean, we have co-hosts literally all across the Bay Area and Northern California. It's a challenge, and especially, you know, people now are double vaxxed and boosted, and, you know, people are traveling, people are doing stuff, and I can't expect everybody to come on the show all the time. But I will say we are, Jay and I are talking about, you know, getting back into the studio, at least the session moving back into the studio, and then I'll probably still be here because I got a kid who's too young to get vaccinated, and I just don't want to chance it. You know what I mean? I know the risk is very low, but I just feel uncomfortable about it. So, look for that. I don't know when, a couple months, maybe, who knows? So you definitely have me for a couple months, but limited time. So I think that's okay to say. Hopefully, I don't know. I have no details about it. We were just literally talking about it last week. So, co-host will be on soon. I think some changes will happen, and, you know, I think it's going to be for the better, to be honest with you. So I think the show will only get better. I do miss the segments, news, feedback, whatever. Hopefully someone sends you feedback you can read on air. Nate in Copenhagen. Yeah, man. I agree. You're the first piece of feedback I've gotten in like 2 months. And, you know, feedback is obviously a listener-generated segment. So if you're not sending it in, I can't read it. I can make it up. I'll make up feedback all day long. That's what I do. Yeah. Anyway, Thomas, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Lead Dog Brewing, leaddogbrewing.com, Lead Dog Brewing on Instagram. Check them out if you're in the Reno Sparks area, which our very own Bev goes to Reno quite a bit. So definitely tell her about it. Go there and check it out. And yeah, thanks for coming on, man. Thanks for sending the beers. They were all tasting pretty good.
Thanks for talking. And yeah, when we get some more good lager releases, I'll send them out to you.
Yeah, please do. And then, you know, eventually I would love to have you guys in the studio because it's a different vibe. And then, you know, we can get your beers on tap, like I was saying, and it's just a different experience.
Yeah, it sounds
awesome.
Sounds super fun.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Oh, yeah. All right, Thomas, man, I really appreciate it. Thanks. And then thanks everybody for listening. I really appreciate that. You know, if you're looking for more beer content, of course, we have Brew Strong, which is Jamil and John Palmer show. New episodes are coming out all the time. I have a couple to edit this week, actually. Got Dr. Homebrew. I think there's a new episode coming this week, although I can't really remember. Yeah, I think there's a new episode coming this week. And, of course, all of our other shows. So, anyway, until next time, everybody, we'll see you later. Take care.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.